Amen. So I was preparing, you know, I got all this stuff done and wrote the sermon and all that. And this morning I showed up and I found these papers from last week. It was Steve's sermon notes from last week. They were sitting in the kitchen, and you know, I don't know if trying to get thrown away or whatever, and just didn't quite make it to the trash can. And I picked them up and I'm disposing of them, and I look at them, I'm like, oh, looky there, it's the same verse. And so, ironically, now, Dr. Steve, well, he didn't get so much into that specific text, but I don't think there's an accident that the 2 weeks in a row that we're both called, you know, both felt led by the Lord to just speak on this same thing. And I think that it's the most important thing. The title, as you can see, oh, we went past the title. There's the text, is Love Jesus. And so you see in Matthew 22 here, in the text, we'll read it, but it's the first and greatest commandment. Let's go ahead and just read that. Matthew 22, starting in verse 34, says, "But when the Pharisees heard that he had silenced the Sadducees, they gathered together, and one of them, a lawyer, asked him a question to test him. 'Teacher, which is the greatest commandment in the law?' And he said to him, 'You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the greatest and first commandment. And the second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments depend the law and the prophets.'" And I think I put it on the slide there that the Gospel of Mark and the Gospel of Luke add in, "and with all your strength." And so Matthew, you know, just different audiences, different people, accounts, you know, and so there's a little difference there, but the text is still essentially the same text. And so you'll see it in the various the Synoptic Gospels that this text, this verse appears in a very similar fashion in all three of the Synoptic Gospels. The last time I preached, I think it was the last time, I taught you what the Synoptic Gospels were. Does anybody remember? I think you answered last time. You're not allowed to answer this time. And so, Synoptic Gospels are, what are the Gospels? Let's start here. What are the Gospels? Matthew, Mark, Luke, John. So those are the Gospels. The Synoptic Gospels are Matthew, Mark, and Luke. So the Gospel of John is just a little different format, a little bit different. Style. If you read through them, Matthew, Mark, and Luke are very linear. It kind of just starts from Jesus's birth, walks through Jesus's life story. John doesn't quite follow that same format. So there's some other differences, but that's just kind of a basic understanding. And so Matthew, Mark, and Luke are called the Synoptic Gospels. They all essentially are telling the same story from different points of view to different audiences. Okay. And so all three of them have a version of this exact text. And so this, you know, so Mark chapter 12, Luke chapter 10, and as you see here, Matthew chapter 22. And so they all have a version of this same text. And it says there, "What is the greatest commandment?" And so, "Teacher, what is the great commandment in the law?" And he said to him, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind." The others add, "with all your strength. This is the great and first commandment. And a second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments depend all the law and the prophets." And so go on to the next slide, Jerry. So just because I like this stuff. So here are the, kind of if you go to those four words, heart, soul, mind, and strength, in the original text that they were written in the Greek. I probably should have looked at the Hebrew because that's where it came from. I'll get into that. Heart, soul, mind, and strength. Heart delineates in the Greek. It's cardia, like cardiac, kind of similar, right? Heart. The center of all physical and spiritual life. And so our soul is psuche or psyche. So you can kind of see the similarities in our English words here. That's the seat of feelings, desires, affections, aversions. So it differs from the body in that it's not dissolved by death. So the soul and the body are separate. The mind is dianoia, which is your understanding or your thinking. And then the strength is ikhus. I think that's iskus. It's a complicated one, which is ability, your might, your force, power. And so kind of what those words are used in the English language. That's how those words are kind of are translated and what they would mean in our English language. And so it's difficult. The translators have a difficult time because the Greek language has, and the Hebrew has much more descriptive words. Like you've probably heard it said before that there's like, I don't know, 7 or 8 different words for love. We translate them all love. And so, but in the Greek, there's multiple different words that can be used to, that we just, we have one word. It just doesn't quite say the same thing. And so, you know, I love my wife and I love lasagna and it's not the same, you know? And so, but we only have one word for that. In the Greek, it gives you multiple options for that. And so, so that's kind of why I give you that. So it kind of helps us understand what those words mean. So now this text in Matthew is actually a quote in, from Matthew, Mark, Luke, Matthew, Mark, and Luke. This text that Jesus describes here as the greatest commandment is actually, he's quoting the Old Testament, which Jesus does quite often. And so this is from Deuteronomy. Okay, and so Deuteronomy chapter 6, it'll be on the board. It says, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your might. And these words that I command you today shall be on your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children and shall talk of them when you sit in your house and when you walk by the way and when you lie down and when you rise. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. You shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates." And so that's a lot of different things that you're supposed to do with these things, isn't it? I mean, on your heart, teach them, talk of them when you walk, when you lie, when you rise, bind them on your hands and between your eyes, on your doorposts, on your gates. And so the picture of here that they're getting is that God is commanding them, keep this in front of you always. Everywhere you go, everything you do, keep the word, my word, before you so that it is constantly at the forefront of your mind and your thought and your attention and your affection. And so that's the understanding that we're to get from what it's teaching us here in Deuteronomy. Now the book of Deuteronomy, just to kind of give you a little background on that, the book of Deuteronomy is part of the Pentateuch. The Pentateuch, pent is five sides, a pentagram or pentagon. It has 5 books, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy is number 5. The book of Deuteronomy is what the name Deuteronomy is kind of a compilation of words, but it basically means the second law. And so the first 5 books of the Old Testament are known as the law that God gave us. He gave it through Moses. And so they go through and they, you know, Genesis to Numbers tells the story of, you know, the creation of the world, the establishing of Israel through Abraham, you know, the exile to Egypt, Moses, the coming back from Egypt, you know, has Noah in there, which doesn't really connect directly to Israel. But, and so it tells the story of Moses on the mountain. He gets the 10 commandments, all their wandering through the deserts and getting ready to go into the promised land. And the Pentateuch ends right before they're entering the promised land. And so that's when Moses goes up on the mountain and he dies. And so God takes him, you know, takes Moses. And so then Joshua then carries on the lineage of Israel. And we start with the book of Joshua and they enter into the promised land and the conquering of the promised land and all that. And so that story is told through through Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers. And then Deuteronomy basically goes and then rehashes that whole story again. It just kind of summarizes everything from Genesis all the way to the end of Numbers. Yeah, Numbers. And so Deuteronomy is kind of this, it's not a second law, but it's then Moses telling the law to the Israelites a second time, just reinforcing it again. The book of Deuteronomy is really it's Moses' kind of last plea with the Israelite people to obey God. He is just pleading with them, explaining to them over in great detail all the things that the Lord has commanded, all the things that the Lord has done, all the miracles he's worked, all the wondrous things he's done before them, all these things that are just pleading with them, obey the Lord, obey the Lord, obey the Lord. And then at Deuteronomy chapter 31, almost at the very end of Deuteronomy, he confesses that, he says, chapter 31, verse 29 says, "For I know that after my death, You will surely act corruptly and turn aside from what I've commanded you. And in the days to come, evil will befall you because you do what is evil in the sight of the Lord, provoking him to anger through the work of your hands." So he gives him this whole command through Deuteronomy again. And at the end of it, he says, "I know you're not going to obey. I know that you're not going to do it, but the Lord is going to be faithful. And when you return to him, he is going to rescue you." And so, I mean, that's the gospel, isn't it? You know, they're going to turn away. We're going to be wicked. We're going to fall away no matter how much, you know, we plead and beg and, you know, with ourselves, with others, with our loved ones, we're going to fall away. But as we turn back to the Lord, he is faithful to forgive us. And so that's Deuteronomy. So our boom today, can you go back to the boom? I know I kind of skipped past it, Jerry. Our boom today is whatever it takes, above all else, love Jesus. So this text in Matthew 22 says, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, with all your strength." So it's the first commandment. It's the greatest commandment. I was surprised as I went and was researching for this sermon how few resources there are about this commandment. There are some, but I was getting ready to go, and I'm like, oh, man, there's going to be all kinds of stuff that I'm going to need to read through, and, you know, everybody and their mom's going to have preached over this and exegeted this and written commentaries on this, and it's going to be, and there wasn't. And I was surprised because I thought there would be. And so, which just kind of seems to me, it's the greatest commandment. Why do we not pay more attention to it? And so let's talk about that a little bit today. So I said, whatever it takes, above all else, love Jesus. So I have some questions. Why? Why is it important for us to love God at all? Deuteronomy 6 commands us, you know, keep this on our heart, keep it in front of us at all times. Why? Why does it matter? Why does God command this in Deuteronomy and repeat it in all three of the Synoptic Gospels? Is it really necessary to love God? Why does God say, why does God say that he shows steadfast love to those who love him and keeps his commandments? Would it be just as effective if we just kept the commandments? Can we just do that part? We just keep the commandments, good, we're great. We don't have to worry about all that love stuff. So why? What's the difference? Is loving God, another question, is loving God the same as loving Jesus? Because this says love God. Well, what about Jesus? Is it the same? Is it different? What does this love look like? How do we get it? How do we grow it? So I'm going to try to answer some of those questions today. Probably could have done like a sermon on each one of those, but here we go. So it's one service today, right? So that means I got to take twice as much time. So question number one, is it necessary to love God / Jesus? Let's just start there. So Matthew 22, where we just read there at the beginning, says, "You shall love the Lord your God." So you shall love the Lord your God. It's a commandment, right? So first of all, God commands us to love him. So kind of tells me that we should probably love him. So that in and of itself makes it kind of necessary. Romans 8:28 goes on to say, says, "And we know that for those who love God, all things work for the good of those who are called according to his purposes. So for those who, what? Love God, not follow his commands. For those who love God, all things work together. 1 Corinthians 2, verse 9 says, "But as it is written, what no eye has seen, nor ear heard, nor the heart of man imagined, what God has prepared for those who," what's that word? "Love him. Blessed is the man who remains steadfast under trial, for when he has stood the test, he will receive the crown of life, which God has promised to those who love him." Who gets the crown of life? Those who love him, right? Those who love him. So why does he, so he already said, keep my commandments, but now then all these texts about loving him. So which is it? Is it both or how? Is some of my questions. And so next question, James 2 verse 5 says, listen, my beloved brothers, has not God chosen those who are poor in the world to be rich of faith and heirs of the kingdom, which he has promised to those who love him? So the crown of life is to those who love him. Heirs of the kingdom are for those who love him. So I think the answer to our first question is yes, it is necessary to love God, right? But is loving God the same as loving Jesus? Let's look at some texts. John 14, verse 9, Jesus said to him, have I been with you so long and you still do not know me, Philip? Whoever has seen me has seen the Father. How can you say, show us the Father? So Jesus is saying, if you've seen me, you've seen God. We're one and the same. John 1, 14 said, the word became flesh, God of God, glory as of the only Son from the Father. If you love the Father, you will love the Son. You cannot love one and not the other. Now, that's a problem for a lot of world religions, is it not? It's all the same God. We all have our own little paths to heaven. It doesn't matter if you're Buddhist or Islamic or Jewish or Christian. We can all get, you know, we all love God. But this just says, if you love the Father, you will love the Son. So loving God and loving Jesus are one and the same. You can't do one without the other. You can't love Jesus and not love God, and you can't love God and not love Jesus. Jesus said so, right? Hebrews 1:3, he, meaning Jesus, is the radiance of the glory of God. The exact imprint. The exact imprint of his nature. And he, Jesus, upholds the universe by the word of his power. After making purification for sin, he sat down at the right hand of the majesty on high. So Jesus is the imprint of God. Jesus is the one that holds the universe and the world by his power. Jesus is the one that made the purification for sins. Colossians 2:9, in him, in Jesus, the whole fullness of deity dwells. Deity, God, the whole fullness of God dwells. Let me just give you a couple more quick ones, but I think I'm making my point. Ephesians 6:24, grace be to all who love our Lord Jesus Christ with love incorruptible. 1 Corinthians 16:12 says the opposite. And so if anyone has no love for the Lord Jesus, let him be accursed. So, loving Jesus is not an option. Loving Jesus is not an alternative. Loving Jesus and loving God is one and the same. You cannot do one without the other. Okay. So, question was, is it necessary to love God and Jesus? If you want to have the pleasure of loving God forever, eternally in heaven, it is necessary to love Christ now. Love Christ now. Jesus. Next question I had. How do I know if I love God? So what am I talking about when I say love Jesus? What does that look like? Can I say we just love Jesus. What? How? Well, Jesus isn't here. I can't buy him roses and take him to dinner. And so, how do we show our love for Jesus? How do we love Jesus? John 14:15 says, if you love me, you will keep my commandments. Uh-oh, there come those commandments again. I thought we just got off the commandments. Didn't we just establish that it was about love and not about commandments? So what are these commandments coming back in here for? So John 14:21 says the same thing. Whoever has my commandments and keeps them, he it is who loves me. And he who loves me will be loved by my Father. I will love him and manifest myself to him. So let's talk about this. Is love about obedience? Is it the same thing? Is loving Jesus, is it all just about commandment keeping? If we just keep the commandments, then that's love. We're good to go. Anybody, any ideas? No? Okay. Les has a question.
I was going to say, when I love my wife, I like to do the things that my wife wants to do. goes to the love of God.
That's fantastic. You, here, you just take these notes and come on. So, Matthew 10, verse 37. This is a tough one. And so I in digging around a little bit, I like this text. It's always kind of been one of those texts that I've been like, man, what does that mean? Matthew 10, 37. Whoever loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. Whoever loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. Now, that's a hard pill to swallow, isn't it? What does that mean? I mean, that's because, I mean, I love my wife and love my kids and I love Jesus, but you know, what does it mean? I think this is what it is. So our love for our parents and children, like Les just said, isn't about obedience, is it? So I do things to bless my wife. I do things to serve my wife because I love my wife, right? It's not because I have to obey my wife. It's because I love my wife. Now, I kind of have to obey my wife. So our love for Jesus, it just said in this text, if you do not love your father or mother more than me. So that means the love for Jesus, if I love my wife and my kids that way, where I want to bless them, I want to serve them, I want to do things for them, I want it, like Wes said, it's not about obeying, it's about loving. If I want that for my wife and Jesus is more than that, then why would it go, how can more be just about obedience? Did I say that right? Does that make sense? So if I love him more than I love them, and when I love them, it's not about obedience, then how is loving more than that turn into just obedience? I think I see a couple of these, so I might have said it right. And so, I mean, it just doesn't make any sense that it would just be about obedience, does it? Because if it's greater than I love my wife and my children, then it's got to be something more than just, well, I just got to obey. That's not love. That's not joy, is it? And so love for my family, love for my loved ones is a love of affection. I treasure them. I get joy out of doing things for my wife. I am blessed in it because she is blessed, right? And vice versa. We were just having this conversation last night. It's a joy to me to outdo her in showing affection and love. So if I can get everything done and the laundry done and all that stuff, and she sees that and just receives it with joy, I mean, it makes me feel good that I have blessed my wife. I long to do those kind of things. And it's not out of a, you get more, I get more, who does the most? It's out of, I want to bless her. And so if I take that and then I ramp it up to a love for Jesus, it becomes, I mean, it says what no man has seen, no eye has heard, can understand. I mean, it's this great love, this great joy. And so it's a treasuring, it's valuing him more than anything. And so John 5, so I want to stay on this for a second because I think there's a cool point here that I read that I want to bring to you. John 5, verse 1 through 5 says, everyone who believes that Jesus is the Christ has been, past tense, born of God. So born of God, then believe, right? Past tense, has been born of God. And everyone who loves the Father loves whomever has been born of him. So again, past tense, has been born of him, loves those who the Father loves, right? By this loving and believing, we know that we love the children of God. When we love God and obey his commandments. So there's commandments again. For this is the love of God, that we keep his commandments, but there's a kicker. And his commandments are not burdensome. It's not a keeping his commandments out of this burden, I just got to obey. God changes our hearts in that. For everyone who has been born of God overcomes the world. That commandment keeping, that's the world. That's the love that the world knows and understands. That's how the world looks at this is, we just got to obey the rules. Those Christians, they're just all about rules and following rules. No, it's not at all about rules. It's about love. We have overcome the world's understanding of obeying, and it's moved on into loving. So for whoever has been born of God overcomes the world, and this is the victory that has overcome the world. What is the victory? What does it say there? Our faith. Our faith is the victory that has overcome the world, that takes commandment keeping and turns it in to love. These commands are not burdensome. The worldly desires are overcome. And this new birth, this being born again, in born of God, it changes us to where that following those keeping commandments brings forth faith and love, overcomes the world. And so let me just run that through. Put that next slide up there, Jerry. Yeah. So let's kind of run through those steps. So being born brings forth belief. Remember the past tense. Belief brings forth the love of God and the love for those who God loves. The love of God brings forth obedience, love and obey. Our obedience is the evidence of our victory in faith. So it's like this cyclical thing. We are born again. The Spirit comes and indwells us. We're going to talk about that in a minute. The Spirit of God comes inside of us, changes our hearts. Out of that changed heart, when I fell in love with Brandy, I longed to do things for her, to bless her, to love. It changed my heart. It's that same thing. The love of God changes my heart. And it's like, what does Jesus want me to do? I am do anything he wants me to do. Where do you want me to go? Who does he want me to talk to? What do I got to do? I need to obey him. I need to follow him. I need to serve him. I need to love. It says here, love those who he loves. Right? And so it changes us. That's the faith that overcomes the world. That's the faith that overcomes the world. So next slide says, love doesn't equal keeping commandments. Keeping commandments is a result of loving him. It's the evidence. The world says that obedience is a burden. Jesus gives us a new heart, and obedience becomes an act of love. He changes our hearts, puts a new heart in us, right? No longer a heart of stone, but a heart of flesh, right? And so Steve read this text last week, Philippians 3, 4, and 9. And I think I just want to read it again because I want to say the word poop. If anyone else thinks that he has reason for confidence in the flesh, I have more. This is the Apostle Paul, right? Apostle Paul, like pillar of faith, crazy obedient apostle, Saul of Tarsus, murdering Christians, road to Damascus, and like crazy awesome. I was reading different commentaries and stuff last night. I probably shouldn't go off the track. Talking about the Apostle Paul and how like he is just hardcore following Jesus, always on point. And then you've got Peter, which is the rest of us, where Peter is just, yay, Jesus, and I'm sinning. Yay, Jesus, you're the devil. Yay, Jesus, and just over and over, Peter is, he's right up and down, and that's my life. Let's be honest, that's all of our lives. Rare are those Pauls that are just like rock stars from the moment God intercedes in their lives, sidetrack. So the Apostle Paul says, if anyone thinks he has reason for confidence in the flesh, I have more. Circumcised on the eighth day of the people of Israel, of the tribe of Benjamin, a Hebrew of Hebrews as to the law, a Pharisee, as to zeal, a persecutor of the church, as to righteousness under the law, blameless. But whatever gain I had, I counted as lost for the sake of Christ. Indeed, I count everything as lost because of the surpassing worth of knowing Christ Jesus, my Lord. For his sake, I have suffered the loss of all things and count them as rubbish in order that I might gain Christ. If I could stand here before you today and claim that I have blameless righteousness, that would be awesome. Isn't that what Paul just said? As to righteousness under the law, blameless. Blameless. I can't stand up here and say that, but Paul can. And what does he call it? He calls it a loss. It's rubbish. Steve exegeted so wisely for us last week that rubbish means poop. Dung is the literal translation of that. It's crap. Righteousness under the law is worthless. Worthless. So, why? What kind of blameless righteousness would be worthless? Why would blameless righteousness be worthless? In righteousness, it wasn't a victory, right? It was dung. So that tells me that there is a kind of commandment keeping that is dung. You can be righteous, blamelessly righteous, and it's dung. What kind of commandment keeping is dung? The same kind of commandment keeping that is burdensome. Right? You see the connection there? Said back in John, 1 John 5, I love God and obey his commands, and his commands are not burdensome. Not burdensome. Righteous, blameless righteousness is burdensome. So that's why it's dung. That's why it's worthless. That's why it's a loss. It means nothing because it's just a burden. And what did Jesus say about burdens? Come on, people. Thank you, Pam. Jesus says that his burden is light, right? His yoke is easy. It's not burdensome. But this blameless, righteous rule following, this commandment, this dung, that's a burden. I don't want that burden. So how do we get this? How do we get this love and this commandment keeping that is not burdensome and that is victory? So that's the next question. So first question, is love for God a gift or is it something we can do? So he said in Matthew 10, whoever loves God and loves the Father more than me, father and mother more than me is not worthy of me. Deuteronomy 30 verse 6, we already read it, said in the Lord your God. No, we didn't read this. It says, Deuteronomy 30 verse 6 says, and the Lord your God will circumcise your heart and the heart of your offspring so that you will love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, that you may live. The Lord your God will circumcise your heart. That means he's going to cut out the part that makes it burdensome. Ezekiel 36, 26 and 27 says, I will give you a new heart and a new spirit. I will put in within you, and I will remove the heart of stone from your flesh and I will remove the heart of stone from your flesh and give you a heart of flesh. And I will put my spirit within you and cause you to walk in my statutes and be careful to obey my rules. So there's that commandment keeping again. You're going to obey my rules, but it's going to be with a new heart. The heart that he gives us, a heart of flesh that is full of joy in this. There's more text here. First Peter hits this over and over again. Verse 3 says, His great mercy, he caused us to be born again. Verse 8 says, though you have not seen him, you haven't seen him, but you still love him. You believe in him and rejoice with inexpressible joy. Verse 23 says, you're born again through the living and abiding word of God. 1 John 4:19 says, we love because he first loved us. So, I mean, it's him. So we don't just decide that today I'm going to love Jesus and all of his commands are not going to be a burden anymore. He does it. So if he's got to do it, how do we get it? If it's all up to him, what's the point of being here? I can just be at home sleeping and stay out of the snow and just wait for him to throw it on me and then I got it and I don't have to worry anymore, right? No. he started it, but it's ours to walk in. Psalm 63, verse 3. This is where I want to kind of bring it today. It says, because your steadfast love is better than life, my lips will praise you. Philippians 3:8 says, that glory gives Jesus a surpassing worth. I missed a text, sorry. Psalm 18, 1 through 3 says, I love you, O Lord, my strength. The Lord is my rock and my fortress and my deliverer, my God, my rock in whom I take refuge, my shield and the horn of my salvation, my stronghold. I call upon the Lord who is worthy to be praised, and I am saved from my enemy. So the foundation of our love for Jesus, from what I get from these texts, all these texts talk about the attributes of God, the glory of Jesus, the beauty of God, the strength of God, how God is our rock, our stronghold, our horn of salvation, our deliverer, our refuge, our fortress, all these things. His glory is surpassing. It's all these over and over and over again. And all of that is pointing us to that's who God is. That's God's attributes. So the foundation of our love for Jesus is in meditating on the attributes of God. So as we turn our focus to God and his attributes and who he is and his glory, then he begins to change our hearts. We start to see the glory of God, and it changes the hardness of our hearts. James 4, verse 8, we've talked about this in here over and over and over for years. Draw near to God and he will draw near to you. That's the promise of God. As we turn our attention to him, he reveals himself to us. John 17, 24 and 26 says, Father, I desire that they also, whom you have given me, may be with me where I am, to see my glory that you have given me because you loved me before the foundation of the world. I made known to them your name, and I will continue to make it known, that the love with which you have loved me may be in them and I in them. The highest gift that Jesus can give us is that we see his glory. That's the pinnacle. We see the glory of God. And so Jesus just said this here. They may be with me where I am to see my glory. I'm going to be in them, and they will see my glory. That the love of the Father, the love that the Father loves the Son is in us, and Jesus is in us. And that love is what will draw us deeper in love with him. So we've got to turn our attentions toward him. We've got to turn our affections toward him. We've got to turn our eyes toward him. And so the same thing, go back to the analogy of my wife. If I pay no attention to her, am I going to be in love with her? If I don't focus on her, if I don't give her love and affection and attention and all these things, is it going to stir my love for her? Or is it going to be empty, burdensome, I got to take care of this dang woman? I mean, it's empty, isn't it? But if I turn my affections toward her, and if I'm just loving her and treasuring her and valuing her, it's gonna stir my love for her. It's gonna boil up inside of me. It's the same thing with Jesus. As we turn our attentions toward him, it stirs that affection in our hearts. We were created to love him. So it's not like we have to manufacture something that's not there. We're made for this, right? And so Matt Chandler said this. He said, as we turn toward him, when we love him, we gaze upon him and delight in him, we begin to be conformed. As we are conformed, what ends up happening is that my desires start to be his desires. What he loves, I start to love. What he hates, I start to hate. Now, if you're a Christian, then more than likely you have the testimony that at one point you gave yourself over to the things that now, where you are now, look at and you find them to be dead and deformed things. Once upon a time, we gave ourselves over to things that I do not treasure, that I find death in, because God changed my heart. And I desire his desires. I love what he loves. I want what he wants, because we put our affection, we put our attention, we love him, we gaze, I love it, gaze upon him. So that's what, I mean, that whole text in Deuteronomy 6, isn't that what that whole purpose was? These words I command you today shall be on your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children. You shall talk of them when you sit in the house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, when you rise, bind them as a sign on your hand, and when they shall be frontlets between your eyes. You shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates. Gaze upon him. Turn your affections upon him, and he will give the desires of your heart. So that's what loving Jesus is. God plants those seeds of love in our hearts, and it stirs in us, and we gaze upon him and we desire him. And so how do we do that? What are like the tangible things to do that? Like, okay, I get this, but am I actually going to like go home and write these things on my door? Is that what that means to do? Maybe. But how do we do that? So my whole goal for this year, and probably for the rest of my life, but I needed to refocus. And so I have like, we've redone things with schedules at the house. My work schedule is different. I've changed my morning schedule routine. I've changed my bedtime routine, and you know, just everything so that I can be more intentional about having these times set aside that I can gaze upon the Lord. That I have purposeful time in my life, that I can gaze upon the Lord, because busyness creeps in, distraction creeps in, laziness creeps in, sin creeps in. And then the next thing we know, we're like, man, where did it go? We can't find it. And we've gotten so far, this drift has just taken us off track. And so I've got to purposely put things in my life that keep me focused on center. I mean, you've ever been to the ocean and you go out in the waves and you're out there messing around, you're surfing. I used to live in California, so yes, once upon a time I surfed. And so I wasn't good at it, but I tried. And so you get out there and like you put all your stuff on the beach and you go out in the water and you're out there surfing and doing stuff. And then you come back into the beach and you're like, where's our stuff? And you look and you look and you find it, and it's like 50, 100 yards down that way. Because while you were out there, you weren't paying attention to where you started at, and you just drift on down. Right? It's that same thing that happens in our lives. If we don't have on purpose things in our lives that is keeping our focus on Jesus, that he remains that plumb line. He remains that point of that landmark for us. We're always going to drift. That's why this whole Deuteronomy is like, keep it in front of you so you stay focused. And so, again, it's not a burden. It's not that we just follow these rules. It's not, well, I get up in the morning and I check my box for doing my Devo time and I check my box for my prayer time. And no, it's that these are the desires of my heart. And so we put things, I have to be on purpose. And so I've got alarms in my phone that go off every time I get to my house. They're like within the little Apple Maps thing reminders. You know, you can set one of those reminders that reminds you of something every time you arrive at a location. So when I get within 500 feet of my house, my phone alarms to remind me to prepare my heart before I walk in that door. Because I know my heart is wicked. And if I go in there and I'm not ready, and ask my kids, this happens all the time. If I go in there and my heart's not ready and I come in and the dishes are piled up and they're playing on their computers and they haven't done their homework, it's not a pretty sight. And so I've got to prepare my heart before I walk in that door that I don't know what I'm about to walk into, but I'm going to approach them with love. And I'm going to approach them with grace. I'm going to be dad where I need to be dad, but I'm not going to be harsh. And so I've got it, same reminder. Every time I walk into my office, when I get in 500 feet of my office, alarm goes off. I've got prayer reminders set on my phone throughout the course of the day that just alarm reminder. I have to have those. I'm weak and I forget and I drift easily, y'all. I get off track easily. I have to purposely put things in my life. We have, if you come to our house, we've got posters on our walls and paintings and signs that are texts of scriptures and reminders of God's good. I have to have those things in front of my eyes 24/7 or I get off track. We set up Sunday service to come together and worship and praise together. We have house churches in the middle of the week so that we can gather back around and we can put our focus back on Jesus and get the distractions of the world silenced for just a minute so I can love Jesus and remind where I started from. We've got discipleship. We've got all these things, shifting the atmosphere. We purposely try to put all these things in place, not to just give you something else that you got to do with the church every Sunday or every however many times a week. It's because we know that we're sinners and we need Jesus to keep us on track and keep me away from sin. That's what loving Jesus is all about. My eyes have to be fixed on him, period. So whatever it takes, above all else, love him. Focus on him. If you need to, listen, it's hard. It's been a pain in the butt, but if you need to reschedule things in your life so that you have time with Jesus and all the busyness and chaos that keeps you going all the time, what's more important? It's a sacrifice. But y'all, if we don't, we find ourselves 100 yards down the beach and we have no idea where our love for Jesus went. Revelation 2, remember your first love. You do all these wonderful, great things, but you've forgotten to love him.